Hello and welcome to the Book of Leaves podcast. My name is Cara Kearney and I am the host. Hello and welcome back to Book of Leaves, an Irish podcast where I interview people in Ireland who are doing amazing things for the planet. And the whole idea is you can take a leaf out of their book to add to your own way of eco-friendly living. And I do too. I have learned so much since I started this back in April in 2019. So here we are 5 years later, season six. I'm just after coming out of hibernation, a much needed little break from the podcast. But over the last few weeks, I have been batch recording loads of interviews so that I don't end up chasing my tail and looking for an interview really quickly before the next episode is due. I have so many really exciting guests lined up for you, loads of different topics, and I'm so excited to have episode 99 with Kildare Wildlife Rescue with Yana. They have an amazing reputation and a very good reason. The work they do is like none other, and I will of course link their website in the show notes. Everything we talk about is in the show notes. This is a bit of a long interview, but there's so much. I mean, we only focus on a couple of different species. We tried to talk about birds, about mammals, about the things that we can do generally to kind of prevent animals being injured in the first place, about what to do if we find an injured animal. There's so many things in here that I think is really important for everyone across Ireland, and hopefully even if you're living abroad, because I know I have a lot of listeners in the US as well. If you're listening to this, hopefully you'll get a little tip or two as well that will help you over there. And of course, they're always looking for volunteers as well, Kildare Wildlife Rescue. At the end of this, just there's a two or three things to say very, very quickly at the end of the interview, but it's a long enough podcast already, so I don't want to keep you too long. What I will say though is don't forget to send in your recordings or your messages to me to be included in episode 100, because this is episode 99. Oh my God, that's so weird to say, but this is episode 99 and the next episode you hear will be episode 100, and that's just going to be me and you guys. So if you have any questions, send them in. If you have any comments of how you have adopted any leaves, any suggestions from any of our previous guests that we've had on, how has that been? Have you put a pond in your garden? Have you started making your own clothes? Have you gone plant-based? Let me know how something has gone for you. And equally, if it's not worked out, if you've any funny stories, any times that you started doing something and someone said, hey, you inspired me, so to show the ripple effect that we all have. And if you also haven't heard a specific item on the podcast, like if there hasn't been something, I know we don't do, I haven't done a lot of like energy podcasts so far. If there's anything on green energy or anything at all that you're like, you know what, that's a leaf that has not been yet shared on Book of Leaves, send it in to me. If you're listening on Spotify or whatever, there'll be an about or show more, and you'll see there should be everything kind of hyperlinked, so you'll be able to see Kildare's website, you'll be able to see the timestamp for the episodes, which I do for all of them now, and you'll be able to see a WhatsApp me a voice note link, and you can send me a voice note or you can just email or message me a little text. If you don't want your voice note played on the podcast, that's absolutely fine. And everybody who sends me something is going to be entered into a little draw to win a little hamper that I've put together with a notebook and a book and some candles and chocolate and nice little things. So I just wanted to celebrate 100 episodes. I know it's just a number, but I'm also pretty proud, and I would not have gotten this far if it wasn't for you guys listening. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much to everyone who's been listening and streaming episodes as well in the downtime, in the hibernation period. I really appreciate it. And of course, thank you so, so, so much to the people who have been supporting me on Patreon and on Buy Me a Coffee. This time of year is always the hardest, because it's when I signed up to all the subscriptions for the website and everything like that in April 2019, and Canva and all the different apps that I use for editing and whatnot. So I really, really appreciate all of the support, and those are also linked in the show notes if anyone has the financial means to contribute. And if you are signed up there, you will also be getting early access to a video piece of a poem I wrote about biodiversity in the spirit of of No Mo May. Hopefully it's ready by Earth Day. It might not be, but I want to share that with the world to try and encourage people to do No Mo May, to leave the bees and leave all our pollinators and let some wilderness back into our gardens. So if you are on Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee, you will get early access to that. I'll be releasing that then into the wider world very soon. So that's very exciting. I was going to release this episode exactly on the anniversary. I accidentally released the first episode of this on Earth Day. I didn't even know it was Earth Day at the time. How far we have all come, how far I have come. If you've started listening back and you're catching up to this podcast from the very beginning, God love you, because I've gone through some very, very eclectic audio quality changes, interview style changes, length of the interviews. I probably ramble a lot at the start and at the end, at the very beginning when I started recording this podcast. In fairness, I'm kind of doing that now. So I am going to wrap up. I will hand over to Yana from Kildare Wildlife Rescue. I love this interview so much. There's so much valuable pieces of information in here, but I'm so excited. Book of Leaves is back. Woohoo! And PS, I'm actually recording in the library. My local library now has a little recording booth, so I can do this without the sound of traffic going by outside my bedroom window, and I don't have to travel all the way out to Ballyfermot Library. But if anyone ever needs like a sound booth to record stuff in, Ballyfermot Library has loads of them, like two big huge studios. Well, one huge one and one small one. The one in the Central Library in Dublin is a tiny little booth, perfect for podcast recording stuff. I'm actually using like their equipment now, so I hope it sounds okay. I think it sounds pretty sweet. But yeah, go support your local libraries. Without them, oh my gosh, life would be pretty tough, man, not gonna lie. Oh, and I'm also doing a No Buy New Year, forgot about that as well. So I'm now vlogging. I had loads to do, and so I decided to procrastinate and create a vlog instead, so you'll find that on YouTube. But anyway, that's enough. Welcome back to Book of Leaves. Thank you so much for being here, and here is Yana from Kildare Wildlife Rescue. Enjoy.
So my name is Yana, and I'm one of the founding members and directors of Kildare Wildlife Rescue, which is a wildlife rescue and rehabilitation organization based in County Kildare. My main role within the organization is that I manage the team responsible for responding to the reports of wildlife casualties from members of the public, and how we respond to them, how we organize, transport of these animals into care, how we advise people how to do it. And apart from that, I do other administrative duties, and as a rehabilitator, I would specialize in lagomorphs, which would be rabbits and hares.
Oh, I was going to ask you what that meant. I'm glad you said that. And how did you end up, because obviously to work in conservation or work in animal rescue, you're not doing it for money, you're not doing it for, like, you know, people get into this because it's something they really care about. Were you always an animal lover growing up, or who or what inspired you to kind of care about wildlife, I guess?
So I definitely would say that I was an animal lover since early childhood, and I would grow up in nature, surrounded by nature a lot. In terms of actual work for conservation or work in rescue, that's something I really came quite late in life, not late, but later in life. And it's, I think, the main inspiration, it might be too cheesy to say, but it would really be my move to Ireland. So where I grew up in Czech Republic, it wouldn't be unusual to spend a lot of time in nature. It would be common. It wouldn't be unusual to know all the names of all the animals and know their behavior and, you know, camping out wild and going foraging for mushrooms and seeing wildlife, recognizing wildlife, knowing what to do when you see wildlife. Now, wow. I'm talking, you know, late 80s, early 90s, before
young.
Social media,
yeah.
and where I grew up. So in my kind of immediate, you know, family and friends, like that, it wouldn't be unusual.
And were you in a suburb or a very rural area?
Small town, kind of-ish, okay. Then kind of moving to bigger city, but that really wouldn't make much difference. It's really hard to kind of relate to Irish context because it's just so different, just the landscape. So let's say over 30% of Czech Republic would be forested, it would be woodland. Yeah. So no matter where you are in the country, you can just walk to your local forest and spend time there. Yeah. And the hiking trail network is, I think, one of the highest densities in the world. So you just get off the train anywhere and just walk anywhere. You're in nature and it's not unusual. At the same time, though, and of course, so it would be this, spending time in nature and camping and being used to, from probably too early age, sleeping just wild in the nature with no tent even, and
so
knowing
cool.
how to set up your campfire and all of that. that would be kind of, you know, it wasn't unusual. And then, of course, then the sense of justice, as a lot of listeners might relate to you, then you find a first cop on and see first kind of injustices being done to animals, and you kind of have this, oh my God, how is that possible? You know, watching Free Willy, for example.
Yeah,
you
oh
know,
my God,
like how many people got awoken just from that. But saying all this, like having, you know, family and friends that would just spend time in nature, I didn't, until I moved to Ireland, I had no kind of concept of or understanding of volunteering at all. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't a thing that was done. I don't remember knowing anybody who would volunteer their time for any kind of cause or organization. And it's only when I moved to Ireland in, I think, 2008, and very soon after, I discovered there is like all these groups doing things. And there is, you know, let's say, I think one of my first people I would meet would be, let's say, Dublin branch of Irish Wildlife Trust doing a talk, and Dublin branch of Birdwatch doing an outing, a trip for people, and these educational events. And then, so I attended these events because I just wanted to see Ireland, see what nature is here. And I met all these people and realized, oh my God, all these people are volunteering to do this. All these people are volunteering to protect nature, to do cleanup of beaches, to educate people about wildlife, because suddenly there is people that actually don't recognize the difference between a sparrow and a starling, and they might not know how their native trees. And I was like, okay, well, this is great. How can I help? And that's how it all kind of started. And then slowly over time, from working with or helping with kind of more conservation organizations, more kind of amount of communications and education, I would be doing things like wildlife-friendly gardening courses for schools and for adults in community centers, maybe helping with surveys and things like that. But it's only, I think now, 5 years ago when I actually truly joined Wildlife Rescue specifically, that I, you know, I might have previously attended maybe some courses and trainings, but again, in my mind, it's not something that I thought I would ever be doing. It would be, oh yeah, that's what the qualified people do. That's not something I can do.
So to clarify, you don't have a qualification necessarily in wildlife rescue or veterinary or something like
that. Well, that's the thing. Like the only qualification you can get really is to be a vet or a vet nurse. That's not going to be wildlife specific. That's going to be very much focused on domestic animals. You're not going to get training in wildlife rehab. There is no courses like that anywhere. Now you can get trainings with different rescues who are already doing it. You might be doing online courses or hands-on courses maybe in the UK or now maybe starting to come here as well. But it's not a qualification you can officially get. You can't go to college for that.
That's such a shame. But so where, when you say you were doing like wildlife, any kind of courses or trainings and stuff, probably short-term things, like where, because this is something that just really interests me as well. Like biodiversity and wildlife is probably the thing about climate action that I am most excited about. Everyone has their own different things. Some people it's energy and whatnot. Mine's wildlife. So I'm so intrigued to hear that like lay people, normal people can kind of join these. So were these offered by the Irish Wildlife Trust or like lots of different kind of charities would have little kind of training events?
Oh yeah, so there'd be different things and, you know, people might be aware that there's so many of these amazing groups, a lot of them doing, let's say, either advocacy or conservations or surveys or, you know, I don't want to start naming them because I will forget some.
Sure. But it's like, good to know,
I think it is really the community, though, because once you join one organization that has something to do with wildlife and you start going to these events and trips and talks and suddenly you meet all these people and it's a small community still. I mean, it is growing, but it is still a small community. And year in, you will know everybody by name, basically. That's what happens. And so you learn from each other and they will, you know, we recommend books to each other and now online courses because like with COVID now, there is suddenly the, you know, a lot of organizations are doing webinars and online training. So you can, if you can't find something in particular in Ireland, you might find a wildlife rescue in the UK doing an online course in maybe basics of rescue. So you learn from each other in terms of anything wildlife related. And then, but for actual rescue and rehab, you need to get hands on. You need to basically tag along with somebody who's already doing it. You need to join an already established rehabilitator or a rescue. And that's the only way you can actually truly learn, because all the theory that you learn, all your bird ID and all the behavior, like once when you're faced with a bird with a broken wing, you need somebody who's done that before to teach you how to handle that.
Exactly. The theory kind of goes out the window and you need some practical experience. But it's so great to see like the work that you guys are doing. Obviously, ideally, wildlife rescue wouldn't be needed, but there's always going to be, you know, some kind of like accidents or whatever that happen. But you said at the very beginning that you're one of the founding members of Kildare Wildlife Rescue, or were you kind of there at the beginning? Like, was it just a group of people that wanted to set this up? Or how did the actual rescue itself come about?
That's exactly what it was, a group of people that wanted to start a rescue.
Oh,
and
unreal.
That's exactly what happened. And again, as I was talking about, it is a small community. We all know each other. So come kind of winter 2021, so kind of I think November, December 2021, we saw the need. So Dan, our current manager and founder, he would kind of get us together and be like, guys, would you be up for a meeting and see, could we figure out a way to maybe start up a rescue, because we're already doing it. We have the people, we have the experience, we have the know-how. Is there a way to make it more official and efficient and provide actual space? Because in that kind of period of time, there would be people that are with us now that would be rehabilitators, maybe in the kind of Kildare, Dublin, Meath area, who would be licensed rehabilitators and able to admit some animals, some wildlife at their homes and treat them. And there might still be vets, you know, that they would work with. But there wasn't a center, there wasn't one particular main wildlife hospital where all the animals could go. And, you know, rehabilitators doing it at home, the capacity is limited, matter how many people you have. So there was really a big need to start something. So we basically got together and tried to plan. And it's like, okay, we need to look for premises, we need to look for money, and we have the people, we know how to do it. We just actually need to start. And so then February 2022, I think we officially launched in Kildare Wildlife Kildare Wildlife Rescue. We started the process of, you know, registering first as a company. Once we have that, you can start the process to register as a charity. And during that time, we were looking for premises. And so for the first couple of months, it would still be rehabilitators doing it at their homes. And then in July 2022, we opened our center in Kildare Town.
Amazing. So you kind of just passed your second birthday there. So
yes.
Yay, happy birthday.
Thank you.
To a little toddler rescue, but you're already doing so much, because given how well you're known all across the country and like all the different Facebook wildlife groups that I'm in, if anyone ever is like, what do I do with this insert injured animal here, everyone's tagging Kildare Wildlife Rescue. So you've already got like such a good name for the work that you do, which is great to see. And I guess, what are the most common cases that you have to deal with, like that we could really help with lifting the weight a little bit without maybe being trained or something, you know?
So in terms of species, it's 75% birds, 25% mammals.
Wow.
Which is kind of makes sense when you look at the number of species of birds Ireland has, which would be about, over 500 species of birds that can be found in Ireland, wow, versus the quite small amount of land mammals, sure, that you would find. So that would be that split. In terms of species, the most commonly reported animal in trouble is foxes and hedgehogs, constantly competing for first place, about most in trouble. And then with birds, it's absolutely any native bird can get into trouble. I think the most commonly reported would be herring gulls, pigeons, both feral pigeons and wood pigeons, all your small garden birds, and then, of course, birds of prey as well, most commonly buzzards, but all other birds of prey and owls, swans. Swans are reported a lot. We kind of have to keep in mind that we rely on members of the public to report animals in need of help. So the reports we would get and the statistics we would get, which I could mention, last year, 2023, we received over 6,000 reports from people about different animals in need. But by the nature of it, the animals are found in proximity to people, in public spaces, in people's gardens, on public beaches. We wouldn't hear about an animal that got injured somewhere in the wood. We would hear about the animals that come into conflict with humans, that would maybe live in towns, live in gardens. That's the animals we hear about.
Sure.
So we can draw some really useful statistics, but we always have to keep in mind that if we admit a migratory seabird, it's not because it got injured out in a sea or a steep cliff. It's only because it got washed up on a beach that is popular walking spot. That's the only reason it got even noticed and brought into our care. And in terms of, if you want me to discuss some of the causes or what?
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I think once we know the causes, we can then look at the solutions, you know, the kind of way. Yeah.
So vast majority of animals we received got injured or sick or orphaned due to human impact. Directly or indirectly, we wouldn't get a rabbit in that got injured by a fox. The fox will just eat the rabbit. We won't hear about it. And of course, we wouldn't take prey animal from its predator.
Exactly, yeah, you're not going to interrupt a natural fight to fix a rabbit like that's what you're for. Yeah.
So directly or indirectly, it's almost all of it human impact. So no matter which way we look at the statistics, and some people might not like to hear it, the most common cause of animals being admitted is injuries caused by outdoor cats.
Really? No way. Mm-hmm. Okay, because I knew outdoor cats were bad, but I didn't think that even like they'd be top. Wow.
Yes. So I do. Mm. We have the database of all the reports we receive, and I crunch the numbers often, and I crunch the numbers for last year. So when we're talking about known causes, of course, we have to account for all the animals that get reported to us with injuries, but they were just found. A bird was found with a broken wing. Nobody knows what happened.
Yeah.
So we don't know. But from the known causes, cat attacks always first place by far. I mean, by great margin, cat attacks are the first thing, then closely followed then by animals hit by a car, and then you have all the other impact causes. So you might have poisonings, entanglement in different debris, so pollution in general, whether it means actual polluted water, ingesting something like maybe hedgehog eating slug pellets or polluted waters, birds getting sick from that, oil birds, but also actual physical entanglement in most commonly in fishing lines that are not disposed of properly, or any other, anything that can't really break down can cause animal to become entangled or trapped somewhere. So fences, barbed wire, razor wire, cattle grids, uncovered drains, small spaces that animals get stuck and maybe not discovered. So all these structures and all these kind of things that can harm wildlife, they do harm wildlife, and we hear about all of those. But by far, I do have to say that outdoor cats do bring in the most injuries. We did crunch, let's say, statistics even just for blackbirds specifically. That would be an example of a bird that we get a lot in, because blackbirds would live in gardens. So when something happens, people would see it and they would bring it in.
And you'd see them hop along the ground a lot as well. Like, I had blackbirds in my old garden, so they're not always in trees, do you know what I mean? Like, they do spend a lot of time on the ground.
Exactly. Yeah. So I remember I wanted to use an example of a common garden bird we see often. So last year I looked, okay, just looking at blackbird nestlings and fledglings, were they reported to us? What happened? And 50% was cats. And all the other issues I mentioned, whether, you know, collision with a window or entangled in something, or, you know, fallen nest, habitat destruction, hedge cutting, all these other causes that can cause birds come into our care, they were the other 50%. The main reason was all these blackbirds caught by cats, which is an incredible number. I'm going to stop hammering about cats.
But this is the thing, right? Because I think I talked about this. I had Colly Ennis on the podcast before, and he talked about this as well. He was actually only sharing a photograph of a cat that had a fledgling in their mouth on his Instagram. We should have our cats indoors, or if you want them to go outside, you should build outdoor kind of enclosures for them, if that's it within your remit. Do bells work? Like, is keeping domestic cats indoors kind of like obviously the best solution? Do bells and the collars work? I know then other cat owners say that that's like a strangulation issue for the cat, and then I'm like, well, should you just keep them indoors? Now, I haven't had a cat in years, so I don't know what I would do, but what do you think?
I mean, anything's better than nothing. If the only thing you're willing to do as a cat owner is to maybe fit it with a bell and keep it indoors at night and during dusk and dawn, that might help reducing the number of animals that cat will kill, but it will not eliminate it. So in, let's say, with the bell or anything that makes noise, of course, animal that's fit to fly away, so let's say an adult bird hears a bell and will fly away.
All right.
But a nest of goldfinch nestlings in your hedge, it doesn't matter whether the cat has a bell or not, and doesn't matter what time of day or night it is. She will find the nest and she will raid the whole nest, or he, the cat. So that's not going to work either, you know? So it might reduce the number, because let's say a fledgling that's already fit enough to get away will hear the bell and hide. And maybe it might reduce the number of rabbit kits being brought in if you let it only out during the day, and they would maybe only come out at dusk or dawn. But in general, it will still catch animals. It will still find fledglings and nestlings that are not able to get away, whether it has a bell or not.
Yeah.
So I think what we would like to see is, you know, responsible pet ownership. And I personally believe that you can provide a cat with absolutely amazing life full of enrichment indoors with, you know, with loads of toys and entertaining. And if you have space, build a catio. And it's for the cats.
A catio. Oh, yeah, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, that's, I know a couple of people who build them recently and they're amazing. And it's for the sake of the cat as well. I mean, there is so much danger out there. Like, how many people you know that had an outdoor cat and then suddenly they never
They'll
see
disappear.
It again?
They disappear. Oh my God, the stories I can tell you about the cats we had growing up. Like, one of them ended up in the newspaper and, like, the lost and found. And when we got him back, he had, like, half a tail missing. And he'd been missing for 2 years or something. And then all of a sudden he was in the newspaper. We're like, where were you? And then we had him for a while. And then he just went and abandoned us again. So, like, they can be, it's not necessarily their free that you're like just giving them, because they do end up in trouble and they end up in fights as well. And like, no, I think we have to kind of think of the bigger picture. And it's hard because obviously we're both big animal lovers, like, so we want the cats to have the best life possible. But like, I've also gone down these rabbit holes on Instagram reels of people building like shelves for their cats to climb on in the inside.
Oh, they're brilliant.
They're like obstacle courses and everything. I'm like, they look amazing.
No,
like,
it can be done. It can be done, absolutely. It can be done because, and I mean, you know, it's your pet ultimately. It's your responsibility to provide it with the best care. And if you leave it out for hours, not knowing what it's doing, it's at risk from wildlife as well, from cars, contracting diseases, parasites. You know, keep it happy inside.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, you mentioned something there that I would like to ask you about, because in one of the Irish wildlife groups that I'm in on Facebook, they're kind of posting in about sick birds a lot at the moment. There's a thing beginning with T that I can't remember.
Trichomoniasis.
I have no idea. Yeah. One of them.
I know what you mean.
So it's like a contagious thing that is killing like garden birds and stuff. If people,
I'm not sure if mammals can contract it, but don't quote me on it. I think it affects birds only.
Okay,
but that's another thing that, you know, if people are looking into ways to help wildlife or to prevent spread of diseases such as trichomoniasis.
Well done.
Bird feeders. Okay. Clean your bird feeders. If you don't have to feed birds, absolutely you don't have to. There is no requirement. They should be in a healthy habitat. They should be able to find their own food. But if you're somebody who enjoys watching birds and want to provide them with feeders and bird baths, look after those feeders.
Okay.
Clean them. With every refill, you should really hot soapy water disinfect and not leave anything dirty. Your water that you put out for wildlife during hot days, again, clean it, disinfect it afterwards, and that will help. And if you are using bird feeders, use those that you can easily take apart and wash. Don't use wood, because or spreading seeds on the ground or using wooden bird feeders, that disease, all the bacteria will just stay on it. So you need to get something that you can actually properly disassemble and wash.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because I think we need to really mind our garden birds. There's no sound that makes me happier than hearing birds singing. Like, it's just one of those things that straight away, even now when it's 4 o'clock in the morning because of the dawn chorus, I'm like, I'll accept this because it's such a beautiful sound. So we have to kind of keep them safe, and obviously for our biodiversity as well. I want to kind of, I guess, touch on mammals, I guess, briefly as well. There's so many different species to kind of talk about, but we don't have a lot of mammals, as you're saying, in Ireland. And our poor badgers and our poor foxes and rabbits, their habitat, where birds can easily find trees and hedges in pockets of gardens, they're really struggling because of the in-between places. You know, everything is so segregated, all of the gardens and everything like that. So what can we do to kind of help them, to stop them being injured? I imagine it's a mixture of, like, habitat destruction for them, mostly, the big kind of mammals.
It is, yeah. So whether you're talking foxes or hedgehogs or badgers or any kind of land mammals like that, of course, the fragmentation of habitats, that's the big issue, right? The territory would be split in halves or quarters with roads and developments, and they just have no other option than to be crossing these roads or getting into estates and getting into you know, in direct danger of being hit by a car or any other issues that they can encounter, like for hedgehogs would be falling into gutter grids and falling into holes, or for rabbits, again, their habitat destruction would be the main one really there, when you're doing a bit of landscaping and suddenly destroy a nest of rabbits in the process. So it's really the habitats, and I think the prevention or the plan for to prevent it in the future would be to make more wildlife corridors, to really connect it, because whether you're talking hedgerows or parks being connected in one way or another, it's for all wildlife, from the smallest insect to birds to mammals, to basically have safe wildlife corridors and passages under or over roads and, you know, connected habitats so they can cross safely. Because even if you might have a big area that, okay, this area might be suitable size of a territory of this particular species, sooner or later they will have to cross. Maybe there will be a young male looking for a new territory. They will have to keep crossing these obstacles that we put in their way. So connecting the habitats and making safe passages for wildlife in general would be great help.
Yeah. Are there any of those flyover bridges in Czech Republic? Like, do they use them anywhere?
There is a couple. I haven't been there for a while, but there, it's not a huge thing. It's more the underpasses, I think.
Oh, they use under... Oh, I didn't even know that was an option. Okay.
There is, like, even here in Ireland, you would see, you know, those little under new roads.
Are they for wildlife, though? Sometimes I see, and I don't know if that's like for a stream or for plumbing or something. So sometimes it's okay.
So
because I could totally see Irish council accidentally doing something good. I'm like, oh yeah.
No, this is all taken into account, or it's supposed to be taken into account. Okay. Again, I wouldn't have direct experience specifically with this. What I do know from somebody who did work on this, that let's say a new road would be being built, and there would of course be environmental assessments, and there would be these recommendations made based on that environmental assessment that, according to this, the best places to do wildlife corridors or underpasses would be here, here and there. And then what might happen, that maybe one might be built correctly, but one was maybe moved because it wasn't suitable for whatever building reasons, and then one might end up being built in an area that's flooded half of the year, so it's basically useless. But again, that's anecdotal, and they are, you know, being taken into consideration. We just need way more. It's just not enough what we have, because like the amount of road traffic casualties we see, I mean, and like anybody driving will see constantly animals being killed on the road. So obviously it's not enough, obviously. Yeah. Whatever we're doing, great, we need to do way more of that. We see, of course, a lot of accidental RTAs, as we call, you know, that's very innocent, somebody doesn't mean any harm, drives even within speed limit after dark, and just out of nowhere, an animal just runs in front of the car, and there is no way to avoid it, it just happens, and the best you can do is to check, is it dead, or is it still alive?
So that's what you should do, if you accidentally hit an animal, you should get out of the car and check if they're alive,
if
or
it's
dead.
Safe to do so. If you're on M50 or anyway on a busy road in a dark corner that you would yourself hit, absolutely do not get out of the car. So if it is safe to do so, you have maybe your high-vis and it's not a busy road, you have safe spot to park your car and actually check, maybe then that's great. Another thing people recommend is, even if the animal on the road is already dead, if you can you move it away from the road? Because the dead animal on the road attracts more animals to eat it. That's now food, and that's how more animals then get hit. But only do it if it's safe to do so. You know. So that's one thing. And unfortunately, we do see a lot of intentional RTAs as well.
As in people on purpose hitting animals?
Of course, a lot of the times we don't know, but we do have some direct eyewitness accounts of, let's say, people throwing bread into the middle of the road, so gulls go in and get run over. I had a volunteer actually seeing somebody chasing a hare on the road and steering the car so it hits the hare. So it does happen. It's a very small percentage of population that does these things. There is research on it as well. There is brilliant studies that they did with fake animals on the road. So it does happen. it's not a lot of people doing it, but you can imagine on a busy road, it just takes one.
But this is the thing, though. It's not like our biodiversity is so terrible here. Like, our native forest is less than 2%. Like, there's no wildlife. There's nowhere for them to go. So our populations are declining, like, everywhere. Like, I don't think anyone is doing good except for maybe the seagulls and the grey squirrels, and they're not even native. Do you know what I mean?
So the gulls are not doing good, though.
Are the gulls not doing good? Oh, they're my God. This is the anti-gull propaganda that's after brainwashing me into thinking there's loads of them.
People think they do well, especially if you like live in a city. So if you live, let's say, in Dublin or in Waterford,
yeah,
you see
gulls everywhere.
So you think, oh, look at all the gulls. They must be doing brilliantly. But where else are they? This is like their last stronghold. And for herring gull specifically, like, it's internationally important population of herring gull.
Now, when you say herring gull, is that the big guy that we see?
The most common one with the red bit on their beak.
Okay.
I mean, we get other gulls, of course, from Dublin as well. Black-headed gulls and lesser black-back. Yeah. But herring gull would be the big guy with the grey wings with a little red spot on the bottom of its beak.
Yeah.
So they are doing, I mean, I don't want to say they're doing well, because of course there is a lot of obstacles in their way. Living in a city comes with loads of dangers. And, you know, like, how can you say a population is healthy just based on their number? Are they living their full lifespans uninjured? You know, that's another question. But people think they're doing well because they see them a lot in towns. But that's because there is really not other places for them to nest safely. The roofs and the kind of proximity to people and our trash, that's kind of easy food that they basically have to, you know, swap for living in actual quote-unquote wild. So, but it is the population of herring gulls and other gulls in Ireland, and it is of international importance, and they are protected, and they are on the red list.
Okay. Oh, are they? I didn't know they were on the red list.
I'm not sure what their current status is, like, per se, whether it's, you
but
know,
we shouldn't, just because we can see them vulnerable all over Dublin, and people joke about, like, how many of them there, it doesn't actually mean that they are okay. Yeah, that's a really good point.
And because they are protected, we do get, of course, loads of calls about gulls. And we are not in the gull season yet. It's only kind of the early summer when they start nesting on roofs and chicks falling down. And then we really get all the calls. But we do incubate and hand rear a lot of gulls every year under a license. So because they live in cities, of course, nests are protected and nobody should interfere with them. But the National Parks and Wildlife Service can give exception and can grant licenses to, let's say, premises that handle food or healthcare kind of establishments that it actually, for safety reasons, the nest needs to be removed. The condition of that license is then to not destroy the nest, but to bring it to us to go their wildlife rescue, to pop them into incubators. And we're actually dozens and dozens every year we hand rear and release back to the wild. And this is done, again, why the license is given and why the condition is there. It's because they are a very important population.
So if people find a nest that is, like, it's impacting or causing a health and safety risk or something like that, that they can ring somebody. Don't move it yourself, obviously, that they should wait for clearance from you guys, or...
So we wouldn't give the permission. We would need to get the permission ourselves. So if, in terms of anything like that, if you think something is a nuisance or health and safety hazard and you need to move it, and that goes for all nests, from the smallest birds to the biggest, all nests are protected. It's even illegal for you to take a photograph of a nest.
Yeah, I only learned this, like, not very long ago, that, like, you can't get, if you're close enough to take a photograph, you're too close to a nest of any bird.
Exactly. They're being stressed and they're not doing what they should be doing as parents. So I think your original question was what you should do if you actually, for whatever reason, need a nest removed.
Yeah.
So you need to get onto National Parks and Wildlife Service. And the ranger for your area will assess that situation. And if they find, this is an actual, let's say, risk to health and safety, or, you know, whatever reason, they might grant that license. And again, the condition of that license will very likely be you can't destroy the nest. It needs to come into rehabilitation. But we wouldn't even, you know, our volunteers wouldn't come out to you and take the nest and then hope we get a permission. Like, we would really wait needed.
Yeah.
Because our priority, of course, is for to not bring them in if we can avoid it, to let the parents do their job.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so there's so many things that I want to pick your brain about, but I guess one of the things that might be an issue for you is people rescuing animals that don't need to be rescued, maybe. So are there ever, like, do you know, when it comes to fledglings, or I think the way hares raise their young, so when should you be called and when should people actually interfere and like and pick up an animal that is in danger, apparent danger, or abandoned?
My first advice would be, don't rush into action. Take a short video of that animal, send it on to us, and we will tell you exactly what it is and whether it needs to be rescued or not. With fledgling specifically, we are now getting into the season. Now it's the start of orphan season, so we will get a lot of reports of birds in need of help, and maybe half of them would be birds that are actually injured or sick, and half of them will be fledglings. Mm-hmm. And until we actually see either a photo or preferably a short video of that bird, it's going to be absolutely impossible for me to advise you what to do. More often than not, species are misidentified. Most people, maybe I shouldn't say most, a lot of people don't really recognize the difference. So very commonly, a small garden bird would be reported as a baby bird, whether, let's say, a larger bird like a crow would be reported as an adult bird. But that adult crow might be actually a fledgling, and that small baby bird might be an adult sparrow, or a goldcrest. One of those, you know, goldcrests are tiny wren. They look like babies just because they're small, but they might be adults who are actually injured and need help. So for that reason, anybody who contacts us, if they don't already contact us with the photo or video, that's the first thing we ask.
So you're asking for that anyway.
Absolutely.
So
if you
just
don't
save
send
time
it in
that.
The first, it will make it faster if you send it in your first message. But if you don't, that's the first thing I'm going to ask you. Please send a video. And if it's a healthy fledgling, I'm like, great, brilliant. You're absolutely not wasting my time. That's brilliant that you contacted us. And you know, is it safe where it is? If it is, great, leave it there. Is it not maybe 100% safe? Okay, is there a branch next to you? You can pop it up on the branch so it's off the ground at least. Mm. And we will talk you through it case by case. The same with, you mentioned leverets. That's my area right there. Rabbits and hares get confused all the time, especially when they're babies. Let's say 2-3-week-old rabbit to an untrained eye would look exactly as a couple of days or leveret. But the difference in advice, it's very different. So I will again ask you for a photo. And if it's a leveret, I can confirm that to you. And if he's not injured, I'm like, yeah, leave him alone. The mom will come at night. You just walk away. You don't even wait for the mom. You're not going to see her. She's going to wait till you're long gone and you can easily walk away and not feel bad about it. Okay. But if it's a rabbit kid of the same size sitting on the ground, that's not good. He should not be above ground. They're born underground. So if he's alone on the grass and not running away from you, there's something wrong with him and he needs to come in. But again, I will not be able to advise you until I actually see what you have.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Are there any other things that you'd like people to know, I guess, for if they see injured wildlife? Are you, by the way, actually, because obviously this is a lot of pressure to have on Kildare Wildlife Rescue because the work you do is known all over the country. So can people ever bring these to vets if they're like in Donegal or, you know, the corner of Cork?
I'll get you. So we are based in Kildare. Maybe I should kind of preface this by saying we are based in Kildare, and generally the areas we cover would be Kildare, Dublin, Meath, and all the surrounding counties. So we might be getting animals even, let's say, from Wicklow, Wexford, Leash, Offaly. We are definitely not the only wildlife rehabilitation place in Ireland. There is, you know, in other areas you might have other wildlife rehabilitators that might be either specializing in particular species, or they might be more general, maybe on a smaller scale or maybe on a bigger scale. Or you might have, there might not be a wildlife rescue in particular county, but there might be a, let's say, an SPCA or domestic animal rescue that might be taking a bit of wildlife.
Right, okay, because I know, because you guys, obviously I live in Dublin, so you're the ones that my locals get referred to a lot. So maybe that's why I kind of had that impression. But I know that there's some amazing rescues. I had Seal Rescue Wildlife on the podcast before. Sure. The Hedgehog Rescue are great, and the Bat Rehabilitation. Yes. So I know those. So I was like, oh, that's nice. It's nice to hear that there are other places of varying, even if they're of varying kind of scales and whatnot across the country.
But like we do get contacted from all over Ireland, which is great. And like we will advise absolutely anybody. You know, if you contact us about a fledgling from, let's say, Donegal, they'll advise you whether it's safe to try to reunite it with its parents or whether it actually needs help. I will not be able to physically help you. I will not be able to send a volunteer up to Donegal, but I will give you kind of the basics, maybe if you need short-term care or whatever is needed for that particular case. And then you can then see, okay, is there a vet closer to me, or is there a rescue closer to me that could help? We are not really strict either with the locations. you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that like all wildlife in Dublin necessarily needs to come to us, and all wildlife that's in, you know, Westmeath or Sligo sure. just can't come to us
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the decision is made based on can it get to us, and are we the closest place that can care for that species? There might be rescues in maybe counties further away that might not be set up for a particular type of animal or for a particular condition. So let's say for badgers, you know, we might be willing to put a badger through longer transport for rehabilitation because we would be uniquely positioned in rehabilitating badgers. Oh. And maybe that local rescue might be brilliant for smaller animals or for birds, but they will just not have the setup that you need for a badger or any larger animal, or the same for migratory seabirds. Another thing that we have a special unit for old wildlife as well. So we would be part of old wildlife response network, and we would have a special room and set up for oiled wildlife specifically. We always try to cooperate with other rescues as much as we can, and the priority is always what's the closest place this particular animal in this particular condition can get the appropriate treatment. If it's us, great, we'll take it. If there's somebody close equipped to it, we don't want to put it on a long transport unnecessarily.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
can go there.
Okay, amazing. And if I guess when people contact the rescue will direct you as to the best place to bring them, be that a vet if they need like emergency treatment and stuff like that. Is it true that vets have to take in wildlife, or can, or who, if you end up bringing a gull or an animal to a vet, who has to pay for it? Do you know?
Like, it is different clinic from clinic. So we are very fortunate to have our own vets, which would be, our center is next to a veterinary clinic. We are renting part of the premises of a veterinary hospital. So we are absolutely so fortunate, so lucky to have that we have a vet next door that is open 24/7, which
oh, wow.
is absolutely amazing.
What's the name of that vet?
So during the day, it's Grey Abbey Veterinary Hospital, and then the night service would be called My Night Vet's Kildare.
Okay.
And our center is located just next to that. We are
Legends.
Renting part of the premises from them. And they're absolutely amazing. They're very much experienced with wildlife and help us a lot with wildlife. So that would be for us in Kildare. But then, of course, you have other areas, you might have Dublin and other areas. And we're really happy that we are developing some really good relationships with some veterinary clinics who are willing to help wildlife more, and that we might be able to call them if there is an animal close to them and we need to kind of find a place. You know, it wouldn't make sense for animal in that condition to travel that far. We would really like somebody closer to have a look at it, to do the triage, to
right.
assess, are the injuries treatable or not? Is there kind of first aid? Are they able to stabilize it before we can put it on a long journey? So we have an ever-growing list of clinics who are absolutely amazing to us and are willing to work with us. It's not every clinic. They don't have to take your pigeon, as you made the example of a pigeon. They don't have to take your pigeon and treat it. And it's up to them whether they will charge or not.
Okay,
so some
okay.
clinics are absolutely amazing. And if it's something simple, they're just like, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah, just leave it here. We'll have a look. And if it's treatable, we'll contact the Kildare Wildlife Rescue. Some vets might be reluctant. Maybe they will charge. Again, it's up to them. And, you know, like, vets are businesses as well, and it might be is the particular member of staff on duty interested in wildlife? Do they have time, or do they have big corporate policy that they are actually not allowed to touch wildlife at all or bring it in? It can be a very stressful environment in a veterinary clinic. What they do need to do, though, they do have duty of care. So if it's a case that the animal needs to be euthanized on welfare grounds, and they're the vet across the road, and you have an animal that's so badly injured that it needs to be euthanized or sick, they do have duty of care, and they do have to do it for you. They're not required to attempt treating that animal, but they do need to make sure that the animal is not left suffering.
Not in
so
pain.
They
okay.
do have to do it for you. They might want to charge, but more often than not, they don't.
Yeah.
It can be sometimes easy to, you know, blame the vets. Oh, the vet was no help at all. I wanted to bring them, you know, a rabbit or something, and they didn't want it. We kind of have to understand as well that the vet is not a good place for wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have the facilities to actually do any long-term treatment or rehabilitation. The vets now know, especially the ones that work with us, okay, well, we can take it and do all of this and maybe keep it overnight and, you know, do all that. But we know that if it then gets better, we can always get it to Kildare Wildlife Rescue, who will do all the rest of the work. We just need to do the first
Amazing.
Initial treatment.
I'd say so many vets are probably just not confident, like, but having not dealt with badgers or foxes or like on
oh,
a regular basis, do you know what I mean?
100%.
So like they'd probably be like me and not know the difference between a baby rabbit and a baby hare, like, do you know, like that. And that's not a bad thing, it's just years and years of working with cows and horses and
oh,
cats 100%. And dogs is going to kind of do that to you.
Yeah. So you might have vets that are very interested in wildlife, or maybe they take exotics, so they might be used to
dealing
with
snakes
sparrows.
And yeah,
so
and all sorts,
they might
yeah.
as well examine a crow because that's the same thing. You might have individual staff members who would be absolutely want to help wildlife so much, but they're just not allowed.
Sure.
They just have
yeah.
general
yeah,
policy management
yeah, yeah,
about
yeah, yeah, yeah,
no
yeah.
no birds. If you need to euthanize a bird, do it outside. Nothing crosses the line of the clinic. And it might be for a very understandable reason as well, because yeah. maybe it's an exotic vet and mm-hmm, they admit mm-hmm. parrots, so they don't want to risk bringing in a wild bird with a disease.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
so Fair. You know, we don't want to blame anybody for not helping wildlife, because there are so many reasons why some people just are not able to do it. Okay. But we are very optimistic and positive, because we are seeing the change. We are seeing the change in attitudes. We are seeing more and more vets being interested in wildlife and willing to treat wildlife and contacting us for advice as well. If any vets are listening, if you get stuck with wildlife, contact us and we send you all you need. We will assess the video. If you can send us, maybe you send us the x-ray images, we can have our vet review it with a second opinion. We can send you medication charts for wildlife, housing advice, whatever you need until you can get it stable and get to us.
Amazing. That's so good to hear. And then I guess for people who aren't vets, for normal people who have a couple of hours a day or a couple of hours a week or a month, like, what can we do? I know obviously donations are probably always helpful because you're a charity, and I'd say a lot of you are just working 24/7, like you're 24/7 contactable, so there's always someone on the... How many people actually do you even have volunteering and working for you? Sorry, I've got my mind's gone a million miles an hour.
That's fine. So we have I think it's now a little over 120 volunteers.
Wow.
That's across all roles, so that would include all the people who would be doing maybe animal care at the actual center in Kildare town. There'll be people doing transports and rescues. There'll be people doing educational work, fundraising, admin work. You know, all that combined now adds up to, I think, 120 something at the moment. In terms of contactable, our main contact for to report a wildlife casualty or just ask us a question would be our email info@kwr.ie, and that's monitored 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day. So it's not 24/7 really. It's 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. for contacting us, and you will get a response. I mean, people might be kind of put off, but oh, it's an email, it's not going to be fast. It is fast. It's actually faster than trying to get through a very busy phone line.
Oh, so people should remember that instead of messaging you on Instagram, send an email.
Yeah, the social media are not monitored. If you message us on social media, you will get automated message. Please send this to info@kwr.ie.
Okay, yeah. That's good to know. And then how can people volunteer and in what various capacities?
Yeah, so if you're interested in volunteering, you have a couple of hours to spare. For any role, really, you can email volunteer@kwr.ie. Our volunteer coordinator, Neve, will invite you to... she does frequently what's called information seminars. I think they're about once a month, like a little informal hour online where you will get to kind of all the different roles that are available, maybe the time requirements they might require. Then you can decide and it's like, okay, great. Yeah, this sounds great. I'm interested in transport. I'm interested in, you know, animal care. I'm interested in this. And then based on what your interest is, you will then get trained for that particular role. So if you decide to do transport, you will get training about how to safely contain and transport wildlife. If you're going to be doing animal care, you will get, of course, hands-on training at our center for that. You will have to complete like a Zoom training first and then get all the practical bits in. But you can also volunteer in other things. You can volunteer just for fundraising, or if you're somebody who has background maybe in education and are very kind of knowledgeable about wildlife and want to volunteer for our educational team, or any really other skill you might have. Maybe you do a bit of maintenance, you're a bit of a handyman, you want to help us fix up enclosures, that's great as well. Like any skill really that you think might be useful, do get in touch and we will find something for you to do for sure.
That's amazing. That's so good to hear. And I know that there's only so much time in the day, but I want to kind of ask you what one of your favorite memories of your time, I guess, doing wildlife rescue is, like, because I know there's so much misery. What's one of your favorite memories that's kind of coming up for you?
I think it's just every single release.
Yeah,
is really, you can't really pick favorites, because when you get an animal to the point that it's able to be released back to the wild, it's all amazing. Like, release days in my book are the best days, whether it's something that was rehabilitated at our center or if it's, you know, a leveret that I would hand rear and then seeing it hop out into the wild. That's just, nothing can compare, really. It's just every single release is absolutely amazing. And reuniting, yeah, so we're not even there witnessing it, but that might be that we advised somebody and we will just, it's very satisfying when people contact you and they're so stressed because they found this injured bird and they're absolutely panicking. thinking about it, because this poor bird, and what do I feed it, what do I do? And then you have a look at a video and you explain, no, this is actually a fledgling, that's actually a young blackbird, and, you know, do you see blackbird? Oh yeah, if blackbird's in a can, I'm like, right, pop him up on a branch and see. And like 5 minutes later they're calling you and they're like bawling happiness. Aww. Like, oh my god, the parents are feeding it, and now all the family is behind the window watching them and noticing wildlife for the first time. I think that's one of my favorites as well, in terms of the members of the public who contact us, because a lot of the times they come across an injured wild animal, they've never come across anything like this before, they don't know what to do, and then they get our advice and they help it, they maybe, you know, do all the right things and bring it to us or whatever else is needed. But maybe it, a lot of the times it's people that never thought about birds before, and now they're in. Now they're like, they're tuned in now. They are now watching birds, or if it's a hedgehog, they're now reading all about hedgehogs with their kids and looking out for hedgehogs more, because they had this one experience where they got to help one of them.
Oh, that's so good. I'd say, yeah, I'm getting secondhand joy and elation from that. And speaking of hand rearing, I guess, what is one of the most difficult animals? Like, I've only ever hand reared an abandoned kitten that thankfully the next day we were able to like bring back to the mum, but it was one of the most stressful nights where you had to wake up like every 20 minutes or half an hour, and oh, it's awful. So I know obviously every animal is different and has different needs, but it's really, if you're hand rearing an orphan animal, like, it's very draining, like, because they get fed so frequently. I guess depends what's, yeah, what are some of the hardest to kind of raise?
There is different levels of difficulties in different aspects. So baby birds, like garden birds specifically, small garden birds, or any kind of bird that you have to hand feed, they need 16 hours of feeding every day, and it might be in 10-20 minutes intervals. So maybe going back to volunteering, we are looking for baby bird feeders now, commercial season. So even if you don't want to do anything else, you can sign up as a volunteer, you get specific training, and you will be going from baby bird to baby bird and feeding it around the clock for maybe 2 hours in your evening that you can spare.
No way. So just you head out to Kildare Wildlife Rescue. And by the way, you can get the bus to your rescue, because I initially was like, oh, will I be able to record out there? And I was looking at public transport because I don't drive, and you can get a bus from Dublin. Well, sorry, I live
very
in Dublin.
Very easily accessible and then public
walk
transport.
Like 10 minutes
it's
or
just
like
by
that.
Kildare Village. So it's
unreal.
Like, yeah, very easily
so
accessible.
So just in case anyone's
transport.
Like, oh, I don't drive. Now you've no excuse. You can go be a baby bird feeder. Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
So they would be the time-intensive ones.
Okay.
And then, of course, you might have animals that they might not, orphans that might not be not need to be fed so frequently, but then they would have other kind of difficulties with them. So let's say, again, me with my rabbit and hair head on. they're not time-consuming at all. They're actually quite, I don't want to say easy, but in terms of the frequency of feeding and the housing requirements, they're not the most difficult, but they have the lowest success rate because of the stress, because they just don't handle stress. And captivity in general is extremely stressful for them. And if they went through, let's say, if something happened, obviously traumatic, before they even got into care, that's why they're in care in the first place. And even if you do absolutely everything right, they might still pass away on you out of nowhere a couple of days or a couple of weeks later. That part is hard as well, because there might just be things that you can't prevent. Like with orphans in general, another, I'm just keep repeating the same point. If you find an animal that you think is orphan, don't panic, don't do anything. Don't try to feed it anything. Don't try to cuddle it. Don't try to kind of make it your new pet project. Send us the video contacts and we will tell you exactly, does it need to be helped? And if it does, we will probably urge you to just get it to us, or to, you know, whoever is closest to you. With mammals specifically, it's so hard to fight your instincts, because your instinct as a person, as an animal lover, you find a little baby animal.
It's to cuddle it, it's to mind.
I want to cuddle it and I want to feed it, but you're going to do so much harm if you try to force feed something into an animal that's not stable, that's cold, that might be dehydrated. You might not be feeding it appropriate things. Very dangerous. Like, and we unfortunately still see it quite often, is people giving milk to wildlife, like actual dairy milk, which is like, no wildlife can process dairy. Like, doesn't matter if it's
only
your baby
cows,
yes,
dairy cows milk is for baby cows.
so things like that's just one example of many. So again, orphans are difficult, they come with sensitivities and difficulties and challenges. So yeah, contact us and we'll help you.
Okay, no, that's good to know, because we need to have as least amount of orphans as possible, because their own parents will know what to do and be way less strain on the rescue as well. My last question, my second last question, my last question before my last question is, this is a really draining job. Like, it's a very draining kind of thing to kind of face with animals that need rescue all the time. So what do you or your kind of fellow volunteers and colleagues kind of do? Like, how do you manage it? Because it's hard. Like, there's a lot going on in the world, let alone in rescue. Like, so how do you, like, I cry at the job. I cried in the waiting room of a vet one time when a guy told me his dog might need to be put down that day. And I was in there, which was my dog, and I started crying. Over his, like, I don't know how you guys do it. So, like, how do you do it? Because we're all kind of struggling about different kind of aspects of what's happening to wildlife or what's going on in the world right now. What are your, some of your, I guess, I don't know, coping mechanisms, and what do your friends do?
I think it's twofold. So for anybody doing any animal rescue, I think if you're kind of hands-on, very frequently seeing animals getting injured or animals, you know, suffering in some way, and you're trying to help them all, but you can't obviously help them all, so it can get very draining. And there is, I think we all take comfort in the fact that we help those we can, and we're doing our absolute best for the welfare of the animals. So whatever other things we might be doing as an organization, the welfare of the animal is always first. Rescue, rehabilitate, return, and make sure that alongside all that, welfare is always the priority. From the initial report through transport, through the care, that there is, we minimize any kind of suffering. So we can, even if we don't manage to help them all, we can take comfort in those that we did help, because we can know that, okay, well, if we didn't, it was distressing maybe for me to see that gull with that really badly injured wing, but like, will I be upset about it, or will I be happy that, like, but thanks to us, he wasn't left dying on the side of the road? So that's one thing, but of course, that can only get you so far. So we encourage each other and often have to remind each other, take a day off.
switch off
all your notifications. Don't look at any reports of wildlife injured coming in. Don't go on any rescues for as long as you need. Take a day off and just go for a walk and look at the healthy animals. Look at the birds flying in your garden not getting injured. And that's always helps. And we always encourage each other to take mental health breaks, and it's very important. But that sounds all very negative, but I would like to kind of bring it back to what it actually is about. You were mentioning all the problems going on in the world and kind of the, you know, climate crisis and biodiversity crisis. I think for myself, and I think I see it with other volunteers as well, what really helped me in this kind of feelings of threat and hopelessness is actually doing rescue or any kind of hands-on work. If you're doing, absolutely do all the other things, do your beach cleanups and do your advocacy and education that support your conservation organization and plant trees for biodiversity. But if you're feeling hopeless that, you know, I'm going to all these protests and I'm stopped using plastic and I cut down on meat and I'm doing all the things, but I still feel this climate anxiety that I'm not doing enough and whatever I do is hopeless, go get hands on, because that day you might take 2 hours to get a hedgehog that got an injured leg from point A to B to get treatment, and nothing else matters in that point. Whatever caused it, you're not going to solve the problem of the pollution in that one day. Maybe whatever, the hedgehog was entangled in plastic. You're not going to solve the problem of plastic pollution in one day. But that one day, you're the one who managed to get the hedgehog for treatment and help him. And you will see the immediate result. You get immediate dopamine boost. And that will help you get you through the next day. And you will see the hope, because you will actually be actively with your hands doing something to help something in need.
That is such a good point. That is such a good point. Okay, ending with some more positivity. If we step into an imaginary time machine, because I haven't got a real time machine, an imaginary one, and go into the future, 100, 200 years, when climate justice has been achieved and biodiversity is thriving, can you paint a bit of a picture of what this looks like and feels like to you?
That sounds amazing. I would imagine in this future you described, there will really be no need for wildlife rescues or animal rescues in general, because in this future, I'm assuming all the pets and domestic animals will be looked after. There will be no need to rescuing any of those, and all the wildlife will be free from conflict with humans. I suppose whatever self-driving, robot-driven vehicles we might be using, they will be equipped with all the sensors, so we won't be hitting animals with our cars anymore. And there will be no pollution, so nothing got entangled in a net. So that sounds like a great future, that you can just walk around and just watch the animals living healthy lives, with their full lifespans, not getting injured. That sounds great.
And more of what you grew up with in Czech Republic, of knowing how to identify kind of things and just being a bit closer with nature everywhere, and more of it. Like, I can see more of it.
In the future described, I can already see the habitats are restored and people just go for a walk as a normal thing. It's not like an event that you plan month in advance that you might go for a hike, but it doesn't work out because it was raining. But it might actually be normal just to spend time in nature and live in Armagh. That all sounds great.
I love it. Jana, you're an absolute legend. Like, this is going to be, I always try to edit podcasts down to like 45 minutes. I already know. I'm like, I can't, there's so little I can shave off this, because what you're saying is absolute gold. Thank you so much for all the volunteering that you do, all the work that you do. And yeah, I'll link the website and share the emails and everything in the body of the show notes, so people can find them very easily, and your socials. Is there anything else you'd like to share from a personal or Kildare Wildlife Rescue angle before we wrap up?
I suppose I definitely should mention donations and Patreon. So volunteering is absolutely great. If you can volunteer, do volunteer. If not with us, then with a wildlife rescue closer to you, or with another animal rescue closer to you, or with any other organization doing things for wildlife, do volunteer your time. But if you can't, you can always support us financially. And it's so important. We're still, as I said, it's only 2 years in now, going into our third season. We're new. We need to get our financial stability. So if you can support our work financially, we have our Patreon. For that, as little as €5 a month, you get access to exclusive talks and behind-the-scenes photos. And it really does help us to have predictable monthly income. It helps us so much. We started Patreon at the very start, and it's absolutely been amazing for us. And we really want to increase that membership. Or you can donate in any other way, through PayPal, once-off donations on PayPal, or monthly, or, you know,
and directly. And they'll take millions, guys. If there's anyone here that has, like, several million euro going, it doesn't have to be €5.
Whatever amount you will give, it will be put to good use, to go directly to help wildlife, that's for sure.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you. Didn't I tell you there were so many great nuggets in there? I'm so, so, so grateful to Jana for giving me the time. And I'm even more grateful to all of the fellow volunteers that are spending so much of their time, their very valuable time, helping Irish wildlife. Well, thanks so much for tuning in. So the two little things that we needed to talk that I just wanted to mention to you. So Jana said something really important after the interview, that any animal that a cat catches, so sometimes if you have a cat, it might bring in a mouse or a bird or whatever. Any animal who comes from a cat needs to be brought in to Kildare Wildlife Rescue, because there's a bacteria in the mouth of a cat that could basically make them very, very sick. So even if they look fine, if they're not injured, they all should be brought into Kildare Wildlife Rescue. So make sure to send them an email, attach a video, and let them know what happened. And there's no judgment happening with Kildare Wildlife Rescue. If it's your own cat, like, they're not going to be like, well, put a bell on your cat's collar. Like, all they care about is making sure that the wild animal is safe. So they want you to bring the animal in. And something else to know, at the moment, they're not open to visitors. So if you Google them and you find them on maps, they're not open to visitors, so you can't just like pop in randomly. But of course, if you're volunteering there, you can then organize your time slot. But of course, Kildare Wildlife Rescue still needs your support, so do sign up to their Patreon. The content they have there is amazing, and they are always looking for volunteers, and of course financial contribution as well, even just one-off if you cannot contribute to Patreon. So yeah, we just wanted to include that couple, those few notes. And of course, if you do have a Patreon or a Buy Me a Coffee account, you can subscribe to either of those. I actually think I'd rather Buy Me a Coffee. It just kind of looks nicer. But you can subscribe to either of those if you would like to contribute to the podcast, anything from €1 to whatever you like euro, because everyone has different amounts of income. Don't put yourself under pressure if you can't, please do leave a review if you do enjoy this podcast. When it is listened to and when there are 5 stars left, it gets shown to more people, and the more people who hear the solutions that we have, the great people in this country that are making the planet better, making the environment of Ireland
socially and ecologically better, the better it is for everyone. So please do leave a review if you can, as well as the vlog series on YouTube. Keep an eye out for an upcoming video where I will release a poem that I wrote that I'm really excited to share with you guys. And last but not least, don't forget to send in your contributions for episode 100. If you can get that to me, hold on, let me just look at the date right now. That episode is going to be released on April 29th. So I will be editing that episode from probably like the 21st to the 25th. So if you could send me in your clips or your messages before then, that would be amazing. Anytime between like the 21st and the 25th, that would be class. And I'm really excited to have a nice little eclectic mixture of suggestions and learnings and reflections for episode 100. Thank you so much for listening. And we're back for season 6. Woohoo! Thank you so much. Talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Oh, I forgot to say, this plays every second Monday, just in case you're wondering when the next one's out. Okay, that's it now. Okay, bye.